Welcome to Pivotal. I'm Hayat Gallo, Corporate Vice President for Commercial Solution Areas at Microsoft. I work with customers around the globe to transform their business through technology. At the center of every transformation are people who give technology its purpose. And that doesn't change with the advent of AI. It's actually being accelerated. People spark visionary ideas for leveraging technology. The release of AI technology like ChatGPT this year is exciting, but it has led to big questions as we grapple with the best way to harness those tools to enhance and support the people behind the work. We like to talk about technology. I love to talk about it. But we often forget that technology is most effective when it supports people with purpose. This season, we'll demystify AI by talking to the innovators using new AI technology to uplift their industries and augment their people, from education to journalism to surfing. And it just illustrates what AI is about. Everybody thinks it's about tech. No, everybody's using AI. And that's what we're going to show you on this season. 2023 was Canada's worst wildfire season on record. The fires forced thousands of people to flee their homes and burned 42 million acres. The wildfire damage drove a 24% increase in the loss of the world's tree cover. According to the World Resources Institute, Canada's tree cover loss hit 8 million hectares last year, up from just over 2 million the year prior. These are sobering statistics. To keep up with this growing problem of wildfire, some are actually turning to AI for innovative solutions. Wildfire management specialists are leveraging AI's unique capability to analyze data to give them an edge in their fight. Since 2022, the province's Forest Firefighting Agency has been using a new AI tool to help support their strategic decision-making and help direct their finite resources more effectively.
Ed Trinchard, and I'm a provincial wildfire management specialist. Most people's journeys in Alberta start with forestry. So as a kid, I wanted to be a park ranger at university, took a degree in forest management, and I worked in the forest industry for a number of years, dealing with trees, measuring trees, seeing if trees were growing. And then while I live in the forest, a job came up with the government for a wildfire ranger. So I applied on the job and became a wildfire ranger. That was almost 20 years ago, and grew in my career to where I am now as a provincial wildfire management specialist.
Over the last 20 years, Ed has experienced firsthand the dramatic environmental shifts.
We do know that we are getting more, I'll call it extreme, but the seasons are more lengthy, I'll say, in Alberta. Our fire seasons start earlier and end later. The other thing that we are seeing is more impactful fires to communities and people. I'm not sure if it's because we're getting more large-scale fires or if it's because we have more people and communities in the forest to interact with those fires. So it's a little bit of both for sure, but we are seeing a shift in the length of the fire season, likely due to climate change. So we've adjusted our fire season timing. So that's the biggest shift. And the fact that we don't have the amount of resources to deal with all the fires on the landscape. So we have to prioritize where we put resources and how we fight fires.
At Alberta Wildfire, duty officers are on the front lines looking out for the latest developments that need attention. During fire season, every day for duty officers begins the same.
Get up, go to work, check the weather, check what happened overnight with all the fires in your forest area or the province, see if we had fire growing overnight, see what the forecasted conditions are through the day, see if we have enough resources. Do we need more resources today or for the next 5 days, and start figure out where those resources are going to come from?
And then they sit through briefings from many different departments devoted to understanding and modeling wildfire behavior.
We have a number of weather meteorologists on staff that brief us on weather. We have fire behavior analysts, which I'm one of those as well, that will brief us on how the fuels are going to interact with the predicted fire behavior. And then lots of fire modelers. And the fire modelers are going to put all that together and grow fires across the landscape.
And then it's time to assign resources.
We assign helicopters to crews and dozer bosses to dozer equipment and ensure they're ready to respond to fires for those waiting for the next fire. There'll be a bunch of people on fires, putting out fires that have occurred in the past weeks or months or the day before. And then we have a bunch of resources that are just ready for the next fire. So you'll be briefing those crews through the day. Once you do have a detection from a fire tower or some people phone in, there's a fire in the forest, then we start sending resources. So we assess, where's that location? What do we need to send? Do we need to send air tankers, helicopters, crews on the ground, or all of it?
If the fire is in close proximity to the community, they send everything.
So everything goes. Obviously, we keep stuff for the next ignition. By everything it goes, I mean that we'll send an air tanker, a helicopter, and ground crews to deal with it. But we have more in reserve for the next ignition as well. So that's kind of the typical day. And you kind of rotate, and it's like Groundhog Day. Every day is the same.
A lot is known about how wildfire behaves once it's started. And Ed and his team draw on their intuition and experience, along with the daily briefings from fire modelers and meteorologists.
We know what's going to happen across the province because our weather forecasts are very accurate and our fire behavior staff are very good at their jobs. So we know what type of fuel, we know the topography at every location. So we can predict what's going to happen. What we can't predict is where the next match is going to drop. So that's what the tool, that's the problem that this tool is endeavoring to solve, because we can have the highest, most extreme hazard, but if we don't have an ignition, it doesn't really matter. So if the hazard's super high and you have no ignition, no problem. Well, it is kind of a critical piece for our business going forward is to know where the next fire is going to start so we can place resources close to that ignition or bring more resources in because we won't be able to manage the number of ignitions.
That's where Alta ML comes in.
Graham Erickson, Senior Lead Machine Learning Developer at Alta ML.
The idea for the AI tool actually came from Alberta Wildfire Management themselves through a general intake form. It's actually interesting with AI. What we're seeing right now is the ideas actually come from the businesses themselves. It's tech that is going to enable it, but at the end of the day, the businesses have to come up with the ideas because they are the ones who are going to need the outcome that comes from the projects. This is one of the biggest tension right now because you need businesses to come up with the ideas, but then they may not be equipped for the technology. So it's the notion of distribution of innovation, but centralized technology. And how do you make that work? It's creating a lot of questions for a customer, their operating model and how they think about it. That's one of the biggest thing I see. So it's interesting because if you're a wildfire expert, you know wildfire and you know what you need, doesn't mean you're an expert at technology. So how do you make that work? That's what we're seeing right now in every customer, every scenario.
We were involved in part of an AI strategy contract with the government of Alberta. And as part of it, we were developing POCs, like proof of concepts, to show the power of AI in different departments. So different departments were allowed to fill out these intake forms and basically propose, you know, we have a problem that's valuable. And then we would take those and do a feasibility assessment where we break it down into some of the core pillars that are needed for AI. So basically, what is the thing that you're predicting? Does the data exist to be able to learn from? Would predictions be able to generate a value in some sort of operation? And assessing those together, you know, we got this intake form from the wildfire management branch, went through that process, and it scored really well. So that's when we moved it into the next phase where we started working on it and created kind of the foundations for what the tool is now.
So Alta ML and Alberta Wildfire worked together on a 4-month proof of concept project. The data prediction, mathematics, and design interface all came together very quickly. After a workshop with Alberta Wildfire Duty officers, they moved to operationalize it with a soft launch in 2022.
Then we did a relaunch in 2023 that was more official, I guess, more of a production release, and had used sort of our feedback from the 2022 season to enhance it. And that's kind of led to today.
AltaML and Alberta Wildfire have worked together to develop a tool that predicts where the next fire will start.
We've divided the province of Alberta into 10 forest management areas, 10 forest areas, and those areas have administrative significance. So basically, they're the areas that a duty officer is supposed to manage the resources that are used in. This is specifically for an activity called pre-suppression planning. This is about fires that haven't started yet. So every day for pre-suppression planning, duty officers in the afternoon make a plan about what resources are needed for their forest area the next day. The resources could be a human crews, but where the real costs come from are heavy equipment like bulldozers and aircraft. That is where a whole lot of costs come in. Historically, Wildfire Management Branch had observed that there's quite a lot of money spent in pre-suppression where they don't end up fighting fires. So this would be planes that idle because they're there for risk management and not actually fighting a fire. So their goal was, hey, we're being too conservative with our risk assessments. We're losing a lot of money in pre-suppression planning. Can we have a tool that allows us to more specifically understand the fire occurrence risk for that next day so that we can plan more effectively and use kind of our budgets more effectively for the pre-suppression outlook? So we've got those 10 forest areas. Every day, then a prediction is made saying the likelihood of fires for the next day. And we've broken it down into morning likelihoods and afternoon likelihoods so that they can plan shifts around that as well.
So each of Alberta's 10 forest areas has an independent duty officer. And each of those duty officers has access to this predictive tool. These officers use this tool and are providing real-time feedback for improvement.
They'll look at the tool every day and they'll see, is there a likelihood of fire ignition in the morning, afternoon, or no ignition probability? And they may or may not adjust their resourcing based on that. AltaML, and there's 10 wildfire management specialists in the province, that they track the, I'll call it the success of the tool. How well is this tool performing over time on a daily basis? So there is a dashboard or a tool for duty officers, and there's a tool for the specialist, so they can look at what's going into the prediction. And if we are seeing the tool potentially predicting wrong, so it's predicting you're going to get a fire tomorrow and no fire happens, you're going to get a fire tomorrow and no fire happens consistently, then the specialist will go into the background and kind of explain why that's happening to the duty officers. And they'll provide feedback to me to provide to AltaML if they're seeing.
Because we're dealing with wildfire and the stakes are high, AltaML has trained this model to be very risk averse.
We don't want the model to predict no fire and fire happens. So we're really tuned the model to be a risk adverse model. So we understand we're going to get more false positives that way. And we're okay with that because we'd rather a false positive or not. Last fire season was historic. We had extreme hazard for a large majority of the fire season. So the utility of the tool at those really high extreme values it's not as useful as you may think it could be. And the reason is at the very high hazards, you need everything to respond to fires. You can't decide, should I hire this helicopter or not? You're hiring every single helicopter that's available. And should I hire this heavy equipment or not? You're hiring all the heavy equipment. So to really test the model on an extreme fire season is probably not the best utility for it. Definitely, there is some days within that fire season where you're at the moderate hazard levels that you can use the tool for deciding on helicopters, yes, no, or heavy equipment, yes, no.
This makes a lot of sense. On extreme hazard days, you don't need an AI tool to validate the assumptions you're seeing and feeling. Where the tool becomes really valuable is on the days where there is a moderate hazard, where the recommendations from experts like fire modelers or meteorologists, along with human intuition, leaves you as the duty officer feeling undecided. Again, the AI tool is here to complement, not replace. It's augmenting the people, not replacing them. A predictive AI tool could also keep this extreme hazard situation where you need all available resources from happening in the first place by helping forecast and suppress large wildfires before they even start. So what is the data and the tool using to iterate past the point of indecision?
It's trained on historical features. A bulk of the features are typical fire weather severity weather predictions. So this is kind of an established system in Canada called the Fire Weather Index. And this is largely related to, like, if you're driving into a national park or something like that, you'll see a sign that says, you know, how severe the weather is for contributing to a fire that day. That is aligned with that information. So the model is working off of the core pieces that kind of anyone has access to for weather. We look at a bunch of temporal features, which is kind of trying to factor in human component. So this has to do with stuff like, is it a weekday versus a weekend? Is it a holiday weekend? Because those change the factors and likelihoods of recreational fires. We've got a global CO2 emission, and this allows us to extrapolate to more extreme fire seasons. So we're learning on years and years of data. Different fire patterns existed in the past, so it uses that CO2 data to extrapolate. And then we've also got like kind of more immediate fire patterns. So it looks at 2-week rolling windows. Like if there were fires recently, that changes the likelihoods of fires. And then there's historical indicators for the region specifically so that it can learn kind of the more personal patterns of fire in that area. Like for example, if the same severity ratings are forecasted in the north of Alberta as they are in the south, an experienced duty officer knows that that means very different things to fire likelihood. The north is a lot more prone to large and out of control fires. The south is more prone to like recreational fires. So these things come out in different likelihoods. So our model has those has the ability to be learning kind of more personal predictions for the different regions and being able to take the weather then predictions into account with those personalizations.
Taking into account the human knowledge of a region is critical to an accurate modeling for this tool, whose goal is to accurately predict the point of ignition. So once the tool has factored in the human component with the expensive data processing, it offers prediction for the experts to consider and act on. You might have heard the phrase, all horsepower, no steering wheel when it comes to AI. But this tool gets smarter the more you teach it, and it learns over time to make better predictions.
A lot of the innovations lie actually is in cloud technology for scaling. And this would be scaling not just the solution itself, but sort of how we're developing it. So we are using Azure, Microsoft Azure Cloud Services for everything for this project, basically. So we use a number of its data storage stuff to be collecting the data daily when it kind of hits and to back up data. We are using something called Azure Functions, which is like a serverless deployment mechanism. We're using that to actually process data daily and make predictions daily, but in like an economical and responsible way, because Azure Functions allows us to not have machines sitting spun up when they'd be idling. It only kicks up resources at the times that they're needed. We use Azure Machine Learning Workspaces for all of our experiment management and development. Azure Manage Endpoints for the actual predictions. And then we use Azure Hosted and Manage Cosmos DB for collecting our output. And then Power BI is where all of the front-end platform kind of stuff sits. So end-to-end, it's Azure Stack. We have everything automated for deployments so that it can be replicated and tested in development, staging, and production environments. And Microsoft directly has helped and advised some of that development.
I'm not a technical guy. It's on my phone. It's on Power BI, whatever that is. There's a link where the duty officers hit a link on their computer. Most people don't have it on their phone. I do, but yeah, it can be on a phone, but it's not a mobile app right now. It's a web-based app.
It's exciting to see developers working together with government entities, harnessing new technology to iterate and experiment with solutions, and embracing these offerings as the way to broaden their scope for problem solving at scale. Reaching people, including people who aren't the tech guys, where they need with a simple UX. For Graham, the latest innovation in cloud technology have had a huge impact on experimentation. The fact that you can simulate within the model and experiment before things even happen is super powerful.
Their cloud offerings are checking a lot of boxes, like especially in the experimentation cycle. I think it's making experimenting in a way that is going to make taking your work to production and turning it into a solution easier than ever before. An example of this would be the Azure Machine Learning workspace has integration with a toolkit called MLflow. And basically, this lets you track your experiments and register your models all kind of while you're developing. And then from there, there's automation for turning that into a deployed model. And this allows you to see kind of through the life cycle, what data was used in what experiment, what were those results, and what is the attached model to go to deployment. And it's that sort of lineage that really leans machine learning development more into like a development operations world, where you've got control over the different pieces that are at play and you're managing your risks throughout the experiment process and not as an afterthought. Before these sort of breakthroughs, the problem would be that someone who was really good at the machine learning technology would be very rapidly typing up experiments. They'd be isolated in a notebook, and there wouldn't be a clear road for, okay, how do we actually turn this into a solution? And these sort of toolkits are allowing us to manage that experimentation process in a similar way you would software development, which is important for being able to take these experimental projects, and actually turn them into stuff people are going to use.
Implementing a new tool, especially an AI predictive tool, has taken some adjustment.
One of the biggest challenge, and I think the AltaML and the Government of Alberta team realized from the get-go on this, was going to be the change management. It's completely new to Wildfire Alberta to be using an artificial intelligence tool. The one thing that we did was AltaML, they developed duty officer personas. So I think they had four or five different personas, a brand new duty officer, an old grizzled duty officer, probably someone like me, and then kind of in between duty officers to kind of figure out what would these people and how would they react using the tool. So we had a duty officer workshop where we ran the tool and we ran them through days, and we asked them to make what's called a pre-suppression plan, where they hire resources, put resources in certain work hours, and come up with a solution for what their plan is the next day. And what we found was a lot of the older folks, I'll say, they're like, well, I knew that was going to happen. And that's perfect in my mind. That's great. Well, if you knew it was going to happen, then the tool's actually working pretty well. Like, so it is lining up with their intuition for what's going to happen.
As we've heard in other episodes, this notion of persona is so critical for success. You have to really understand who you are targeting, who you're trying to help, what outcome you're trying to drive. And when you do it, you get the best results. And this is also how you get the feedback loop, with the humans giving you feedback, feeding the model, and then the model gets better. Developing persona is also going to help you gauge how people will feel about using the AI tool. Identifying people's fears is really crucial to an effective change management. They're actually doing everything they need to do. It's actually pretty impressive. And the feedback loop is so great. They're really listening to their users and designing around users and needs. And that is what makes the tech better and relevant. Ed collects this feedback from the other duty officers and brings it to Graham and the AltaML team. This is also helpful for accelerating the onboarding phase and helping the newbies?
They found that the more experienced duty officers, it sort of confirmed things they already knew. And for the more rookie duty officers, it came in with more novel insights. And this was actually validating because that meant that we could position this tool as a way to sort of enhance and stabilize sort of expert knowledge, like distribute expert knowledge. And there's a lot of fields, you know, that deal with this problem of what do you do when experts are retiring, right? Like if you've got an aging sort of population in this expert field, how do you bring on new people? How do you democratize that knowledge? How do you get them involved? And this seemed to be actually picking up on some of those intuitions that duty officers would have if they worked for like 20 years doing this. But it would let a more junior officer, you know, pick up those intuitions much quicker.
Despite the natural change management process, Graham actually thinks the wildfire management forestry team is a prime group for experimenting and adopting these new technologies.
They've actually been, and maybe I'm stereotyping kind of forestry analytics people right now, but they've been working with analytics statistical solutions for a long time. And they're very direct and they kind of believe in what they're working on. So they're great for adopting these technologies, right? They don't have a lot of patience for kind of the marketing fluff that goes on. They're direct to the point. If something has value, they'll use it. If it doesn't, they won't. And they're used to working with statistical measures. Like the FWI system I mentioned was developed in like the 70s, I think. So shifting to AI, but delivering them with predictions and likelihoods and that sort of thing, it's very natural fit for them and isn't too much of a heavy change management process.
At the end of the day, with change management, and here we're seeing it, it's all about the value you bring to people. If it's fluff, they won't take it. If it's concrete and it's really helping their day-to-day, they'll adopt it. They'll give feedback, there'll be friction, but they'll adopt it. Even with a team that is more adaptable, a busy fire season means more government resources and more hires. But there's still an experience gap.
So we have a ton of new staff that they don't have the experiential base built up to know what, I call it a bad fire day. I walk outside. I live on an acreage, so I live in the forest, and I never walk on my path to my car, like my paved path. I always walk through my grass. If I walk through my grass and my shoes stay dry at 6 a.m. when I leave, it's going to be a bad fire day because the humidity has not come up overnight. So that's kind of my first indication. So it's not a computer program. It's just grass. So just those little things, we're trying to bridge, I call it bridging the knowledge gap. And then younger duty officers or newer duty officers or inexperienced duty officers can look at the tool and make a decision based on the tool and hopefully build that gut feel as well. So they're going to see the tools predicting it. They'll look outside at the weather and they'll understand the relationships between the two. When I started, lots of the time when we thought of ignition, we'd look at very windy days. That's a bad ignition day for Alberta. We get a lot of power line fires. So if it's windy, ignitions, or if it's a long weekend, humid ignitions. Beyond that, it was really hard to know when we were going to get the humid ignitions. So this is kind of just a way, it's another tool in the toolbox to assess, okay, we have bad weather conditions, our fuels are dry, and we're getting ignition. Let's be ultra prepared today.
For Ed, this AI tools has shown great promise, thanks to the simple fact that people are using it.
So it doesn't sound like a big success, but just getting folks to look at the tool is a huge success in my mind, that they're looking at the tool. Some duty officers have reported that they've changed some of their pre-suppression plans based on it, especially in those mid-range hazards. So should I hire a helicopter? Yes or no? And the tool said no fire, so they didn't hire a helicopter. So not hiring a helicopter saves the government of Alberta tens of thousands of dollars. So you multiply that by 10 forest areas, by multiple helicopters, the savings can be in the tens of millions of dollars over a fire season.
Throughout the two seasons of our conversation on Pivotal,
We've discussed the need to overcome the push factor and really generate a pull towards the new tech. And in this case, it sounds like they're already there. Duty officers are reaching for this tech, referencing the tech, and the feedback is being fed back to Graham and the developers at Alta ML so they can refine, iterate, and experiment. All is happening while the tool is in use. As Alberta Wildfire and Alta ML look towards fire season 2024, there are a few items that are top of mind.
One of the challenges we found is actually we didn't find a source that saves their forecasts. So the forecast for Environment Canada, the multi-day forecast, they save the actual weather, but they don't save the forecasted weather. They save the actuals for record keeping and stuff, but the actual forecast that they made isn't saved. And that's what we want to base the prediction tool on. So some of those interesting little data issues become a real challenge moving forward. So obviously, like we're trying to attain weather forecast information. We save all our weather forecasts in the province, but we just forecast out to tomorrow. We don't forecast out multi-days. So our meteorologists for Environment Canada, we're working with them to try and get those longer term forecasts saved so that we can test the tool and train the tool on forecasts. We don't want to train the tool on actuals because we need to predict into the future. We don't need to predict what's happening right now.
If we could at least get to like 3 days out, that would be much more flexible. So duty officers do make predictions for 1 day out, but what's tricky is navigating things like claims. Like if you have 1 day that says high risk and the next day says low and then the next day says high, that's way too much of a yo-yo for you to be throwing planes around the province. So that 3 day sort of average forecast is what we'd probably need to move to for them to pull it into planning kind of to its highest degree of success.
It is surprising to me that forecasted weather data isn't recorded. And I'm reminded to the fact that 90% of the world's data was actually created in the last 2 years. And every 2 years, the volume of data across the world doubles in size. So as we look ahead with that in mind, I'm confident weather forecasts, not just the actuals, will be captured so that the data can be harnessed soon. Aside from capturing weather forecasts to help their model, Alberta Wildfire and Alta ML are working on building in more granularity.
We know that the next steps for this model are to make predictions more spatially granular. The 10 regions are massive. And while this aligns with their current planning philosophy, this does still have some open-ended questions. For example, there's some places in the north, there's some regions that could basically be cut into two areas, but they have very different sizes. They could be cut into an area where a lot of people live, and they could be cut into an area where not that many people live. And managing those two kind of situations is very different. And the risks that you would kind of take into account are very different.
Alta ML is exploring breaking up this large area into areas that are defined by something more significant than just administration.
Another thing would be like power lines. Like we would want to be able to overlay pretty nice maps of power line and power line assets. I know there's different companies now looking at, say, vegetation and power line risks, like for power companies to be doing their own vegetation management. So hopefully there'll be breakthroughs kind of from that world that we could borrow.
It's impressive to see how they're already thinking about what's next. They're already so refined. They really get what the model is and how you need to think about data sets for more accurate predictions. They know what they're doing, and they're already on to the next thing. They're thinking very pragmatically about how to match operations with data. A more spatially granular tool will have far-reaching downstream impact. More specific ignition prediction will lead to more accurate fire growth models, which will all lead to faster response time to contain and prevent wildfires. In the end, there are still 10 duty officers at 10 forest locations throughout Alberta province, looking at all the information needed to make a decision to send or not to send critical resources to a location before a fire starts. Their decision will always center around trust, trusting the tools, the data, and their experience.
So we kind of already are. We spread our resources out across the entire province to make sure that we have kind of average coverage, I guess. But if once we incorporate the tool more at a granular level, it won't be at an average level. It will be based on values and potential for ignition and impact, I'll say. So then we'd shift. So instead of having, you know, three crews here and three crews there, we might have five crews here and just one crew in the other location where there's less likelihood of fires. So the risk of that is the trust in the tool. So that becomes when you trust the tool's outcome or not. If you have low trust, you're likely going to just keep your crews average. If you have high trust, you'll move your crews based on the tool's outcome. We're not there yet, but that's where we want to get is putting people in places where ignition's happening. Right now, we move crews around to common locations. Like we'll always put them at this location if there's hazard out in this corner of the map. But we might actually put them right next to an ignition that hasn't happened. So they're there in the morning, and then it's predicting an ignition to happen in close proximity in the afternoon. They're already there waiting for the ignition. So it is a little strange to do that and risky, but it's more about trust in the tool and just change management and being okay with making the wrong decision too. So if all the tools are aligning and supporting the decision of the duty officer and they make that decision, as long as the organization understands why all those decisions were made and backs up the individual with the decision making.
Looking forward, there is a huge potential for this tool to extend beyond Alberta.
We do think like it would be a natural fit and a pretty easy fit for any other Canadian jurisdiction. But just because that's the FWI system, but it's not restricted to Canadian. It would need some modification and customization, but that's definitely, that's what we do is custom solutions. So we would love to bring it to other jurisdictions if people are interested.
Graham reflects on the power of working with the public sector.
It's, you know, I think government sometimes gets a bad rap of being kind of behind on the times or slow to adopt. And I'm sure there are ways where there is a slowness to adopt due to like due diligence and that sort of thing. But the welfare management branch is not slow to adopt. It's fairly cutting edge and they're working on problems that do have this kind of net benefit for all Albertans. And, you know, if we can bring this to other areas, like large groups of people. So I believe that AI in public sector makes an awful lot of sense because this is a way to distribute the value of AI to onto problems that have a societal or even social benefit for us as a people. It is not solely for kind of individual commercial benefit. We're working in a domain where the value and the benefit goes has kind of large impact for our societies. And I think that applies to an awful lot of public sector problems. And so there's real value in being able to work on public sector problems with that regards.
Last year's devastating wildfires in Canada are just one example of the impacts of climate change. We need to use every tool at our disposal to face this crisis, including AI. In our previous episode with biodiversity, it was all about a government trying to understand the composition of land. And we see exciting projects emerge when the public sector partners with developers, working with the latest tech. AI offers an amazing opportunity to scale those efforts. This should be something that every government wants to leverage and to use, whether it's climate or other societal agendas that they may have, tech can really help. And this is a fantastic example of it. In this case, it's amazing to see how Alberta structured their innovation. They prioritize, they score, they implement, and they have a dedicated and experienced duty officer and a sharp software engineering team together creating and refining a tool that can save money, wildlife, and perhaps even lives. It's a great example and a fantastic story, and I hope we get to see many, many more of those. So this is the season 2 finale. What an exciting season. I mean, we started the year thinking about how AI can really unearth new possibilities for the world. And we also started by saying, we know there is a lot of anxiety in the system. And is it good to use AI or is it bad? And I think what we've learned is there is no good and bad. There is really identifying an outcome that you're looking to achieve and then using the technology on behalf of whatever it is that you're trying to do. And when you do it, make sure you complement the human. It's not about replacing the human. And I think we saw that consistently. The human needs to be in the loop. And we need to make sure that all the drudgery work gets away and they can focus on the most important things. And we've seen that over and over again. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. This is very exciting.
Thank you for listening to Pivotal. I'd love to hear your story and your pivotal moment. So don't hesitate to follow me and share on LinkedIn. Audience information is also available in the show notes. Our show is produced by Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. Special thanks to Lin Yang and our partners at We Communications.